Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report, a special long weekend, July 4th long weekend daily editorial. Shad and I have a bit of a slower day today. We're actually catching up with a lot of companies, but we're back at it recording segments as of tomorrow. We do have one special segment for all of you today, as Shad and I are chatting with Nicholas Pardini. He is the founder and chief macro strategist at Davos Investment Group. You can also follow Nick on YouTube under Analyzing Finance with Nick. I will post a link to Nick's YouTube page here. Now, Nick, it's been, I think, over a year since I had you back on the show. I know your newsletter, the Davos Investment Group, very much focused on institutional investors. Take us through a little bit, just as a background for some of our new listeners, on what Davos Investment Group does, what you focus on, where your niche is in these markets.
Yeah, Davos Investment Group is a global macro-focused research firm. We mainly focus on finding a lot of the unquantifiable risk in the marketplace, whether it's through directional ideas in the equity and currency and futures markets, or from a volatility perspective. I try to find where risks are mispriced, and based off of that, where I'm getting paid to take the right side of the trade or not from a positive risk reward basis. And also what I do is help narrow down all the noise that's out there in the market to the things that actually are matter for investors over a longer term period of time, whether it's not just economic things, but also sociocultural and political trends.
So Nick, let's talk about then these markets. Let's start off from a very high level in terms of what's driving these markets, especially when it comes to the psychology of investors. It seems like recently, over the last, let's say, year, everyone's very focused on inflation. And if you follow inflation expectations, even more so than the data, you see different nuanced moves within these markets. It was at the tail end of last year where inflation expectations were running hot. We were seeing that rotation back into commodities broadly and into the value trade. But in the last month, maybe two, we've seen a pullback in inflation expectations. And now we've seen that rotation back into some of the growth and tech stocks. What do you think, Nick? How is inflation so critical? Why is it so critical to where investors are putting money now? And what do you think the market's missing?
Well, inflation is critical because inflation is what causes investors to think either super long-term in duration or short-term in duration. And also it somewhat projects people's hopes on whether you're going to ever have real positive interest rates again or not. So when you have no inflation and no interest rates, you don't care about profitability. You don't even care about what happens in the next 1, 2, 5 years. It's really about, you just want that long shot of something that could potentially turn into the next FANG company, or that could be make lots of money indefinitely, because you don't have any carry cost to not go for the long shot. That's why when you have slow growth and low inflation, it benefits tech and it benefits VC, it benefits private equity, and it benefits illiquid stuff because of the, it lengthens people's time frames. Whereas if you have high inflation, that means that either interest rates will go up and therefore you can get return on your money now, so you don't need to wait for the long shot. Or because even if they don't raise interest rates, you still need money now because you need to make, you need your portfolio to grow or get income growth at a level that is faster than inflation is eroding your existing capital. So it provides a more immediate need. And so that's why when you have higher inflation, things such as value, high dividend stocks, and natural resources, real estate, that they will do better. If real estate's actually kind of a mixed bag. Some real estate benefits from deflation because real estate kind of trades like a bond with a roof on it, while other kinds of real estate benefit from a more inflationary environment because a lot of investors flock to that in order to be in a hard asset. So that's a mixed bag, but generally, things that have a more immediate payoff, such as the value and high dividend and natural resources tend to do better with inflation. Stuff with a longer term payout but more potential do better in deflation.
Now, Nick, to your point about investors wanting a return now or a big return in the near term, that's definitely come into play in the last year plus during the pandemic when it seems like a whole new type of investor entered these markets. But isn't that true for a lot of the way even funds or institutions need to manage their portfolios because they are judged so much year over year and quarter over quarter?
Well, yeah. I mean, due to that's always been the case. So I don't really think that hedge funds have always been judged on a monthly and quarterly basis. So I don't think that's changed in the last year.
How do you see that playing into these markets, though? Because look, a lot of the money, big money, gets given to these large institutions and they're out there making these short-term bets. So how do you, I guess, communicate with some of your clients in terms of a longer-term strategy?
Yeah, I don't factor that into my analysis just because it's not a changing variable. Like, there's always going to be hedge funds doing stuff.
Fair. Let's talk about inflation then. Where do you stand on the direction inflation is going?
I think in the short term, inflation is going to miss expectations and fall, mainly because you had the peak base effects happening over the last 2 months. Peak base effect for energy was in April. Peak base effect for food will be in July. And peak base effect for things such as autos will be by fall of this year. And housing prices, their base effect, there's no peak because it didn't really go down very much. But the acceleration of housing prices peaked at about last September. So overall, that's going to deflate expectations. And also a lot of the inflation has been driven by supply shocks, whether it's manufacturing supply shocks due to chip plants catching on fire in Asia, or factories getting slow to get back to work due to COVID, or mines being shut down for similar reasons. A lot of the supply for stuff that can be regenerated just by people getting back to work and inputs and manufacturing particularly just ramping up to meet up for the catch-up demand, those prices should normalize and head back down. So that's why, and then the other side is labor. Labor has been artificially held up by the fact that in the United States, at least, and I think it's similar in other countries, developed countries, that you're paying a large portion of the population not to work. And by doing that, you're artificially raising the minimum wage because it doesn't make sense if somebody's making $20 an hour to sit at home for them to take a job making $15. So you've got a large chunk of people that's sitting out of the labor force. That's why even all the other economic data points look great in the United States right now, that unemployment remains high because the economic incentives do not align with people going back to work, particularly on lower skilled labor. And that's why you see such shortages. But assuming that the Biden administration doesn't renew the extended unemployment benefits after Labor Day, that labor shortage will be gone very quickly.
So, Nick, you're expecting that after these base effects wear off and after some of the supply constraints, like the semiconductor situation with cars, for example, once some of those work themselves through the system, that we'll actually see inflation taper back down some for the next period of time. You had mentioned off mic maybe like a year-ish or something like that. But you do see longer-term inflation coming back. So maybe walk us through what you see during this time period where we see inflation not run as hot as many are expecting, what you'll be positioning in, and then how would that change, obviously, when inflation rears its head again?
Yeah, in terms of what I will be positioning in, I will be positioning in long dollar currency pairs, generally, because I think that the combination of inflation expectations coming down, which will raise real interest rates by default, and the fact that the U.S. economy is able to open up better means that a lot of people will expect possible rate hikes, and therefore the rate differentials between the U.S. and the rest of the world will narrow. And also, with the manufacturing goods costs going down, import costs will decline, but export costs will remain high because a lot of the commodities that the United States is exporting will maintain some of their purchasing power, even in a deflationary environment. So I think dollar does better. Bonds will probably do better than expected. Growth stocks will do better than expected because growth stocks benefit from deflation. And I think that the growth over value trade will last until the market overall peaks, which could happen as soon as this quarter. But given how strong it is, it's very difficult for me to time that, to be quite honest with you. But when that I think, though, it will result in some sort of correction. My guess would be sometime towards the end of this year. But I'm not positioning for that yet because it's too early.
Yeah, there's some people that have been waiting for a correction for a long time. We're now 12 years into one of the longest bull runs in all time. But eventually things will top and will fall back down.
It's actually the start of a new bull market. The last bull market ended with the pandemic. This is a totally different animal. But I think this might be one of the shortest bull markets, following one of the longest bull markets of all time, because the business cycle has just sped up. Like we went through a whole early and mid-cycle behavior realignments in less than a year already in the economy and in the markets, both in terms of asset price rotations and overall movement. So we may have the longest bull market of all time, followed by the shortest bull market, one of the shorter bull markets of all time.
That's an interesting take on things. So things kind of reset during the pandemic crash, and we're kind of in a different business cycle. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, though, was you had mentioned you thought because of the expectations, if we do see a tapering of inflation, that if rates started increasing, would the rates increasing be one of the things that puts a cap on the market growth? Do you think that the rate increase could cause some of the correction in and of itself?
Oh, if they do a rate increase into slowing inflation, that will turn into a major bear market. I mean, my assumption is that they will not increase. But if they do, yeah, that will greatly increase the magnitude of any sort of downturn in the market.
Okay, so the Fed is critical here, right? That also is a consideration that we need to, consider when investing. You think it sounds like the Fed is going to more or less stay on the sidelines, keep the current monetary policy where it is?
They will, unless if inflation forces their hand.
What does that look like? Because right now, the inflation, or at least some of the data, did perk up. But the Fed was pretty steadfast in saying they think it's transitory, or at least they're waiting to see if it's not transitory. What, in your eyes, would force the Fed to change then?
If I'm wrong and it's not, and we don't see the inflation start tapering off in the late summer and fall, that's what it proves is not transitory, is that even after the labor shortage stuff is over, then that would be one sign that inflation is not transitory, because you have a lot of the supply normalization and it keeps going higher. I don't think that's very likely to happen, but that would prove it. I think longer term, though, once all that stuff is normalized, the structural drivers that are more Fed-driven parts of inflation, which is mainly the real estate market, and to a lesser extent, the energy market, are the two marginal drivers of inflation. And those are more structural, and those are not going to immediately normalize like a lot of other assets. And so that's why I think that even if inflation comes off in the short term, in the longer term, it will start to come back at probably the point when people least expect it.
So how do commodities play into all this? And what is your outlook for commodities? Because you go back a year, just over this pandemic, all of the commodities have had their time to run. Recently, a lot have started to pull back, but it was a euphoric move in almost every individual commodity over at least a couple month period, some for over a year. How do you see commodities in this environment that you're outlining, with kind of mixed inflation and different cross currents?
I think that the commodities are going to be more divergent. Some commodities, I think, will not do so well. I think industrial metals probably are the ones that have the most risk to downside. Precious metals will have to wait to like really take off once the crypto market settles its issues, because that's a competing bid, particularly for gold. I like the best in the commodity market agriculture, because the demand is more stable, and there are climate risks that are going on that we may have a unfavorable growing summer. So I'm more positive on agriculture relative to some of the other commodities. And then oil, I'm fairly neutral. I was pretty positive on it up until recently, but we seem to hit a major technical resistance point in crude. And fundamentally, the work remote trend longer term is a negative for crude demand, even if supplies are restricted due to geopolitical reasons.
Well, Nick, let me ask you this. You had mentioned off mic that even in an environment where we finally get to, let's say a year out, a rising inflation and some of these commodities start taking off, you also expected a stronger dollar during that, which I thought was unique because normally you'd expect a weakening dollar as commodities are strengthening and if there's an inflationary period. So could you walk us through what you're looking at as far as the dollar and how you think that'll play into things?
Well, I think that people need to look at what the U.S. imports and exports. We mostly import lower cost manufactured goods or luxury consumer goods from Europe. Those are kind of some of the bigger things. And energy used to be, but now that the U.S. produces a lot of its own energy, energy is not as big of a import as a component of the trade deficit. So the trade deficit is primarily denominated by consumer goods from Europe and Asia, whereas what the U.S. exports is weaponry, technology, agriculture, and oil and natural gas. So if you have strong commodity prices for the stuff that the U.S. exports and you see disinflation in the manufactured goods, that would narrow the trade deficit and therefore be positive for the U.S. dollar. And then also the fact the U.S. economy has been open longer and is doing relatively better than Europe or Asia for a variety of different reasons, then the market's going to start to anticipate a shrinking real yield spread, which is also favorable for the U.S. dollar. I'm not saying that the U.S. dollar is going to be better than every financial asset or hard asset, but I think relative to other currencies, it's in great shape.
Now, does that dollar outlook also play into that mix in inflation that you're seeing, especially this short-term potential disinflationary environment?
Yeah, I think the disinflation helps the dollar. The longer term, if inflation goes up, I'm not as sure because it really depends on what happens in foreign housing markets relative to the U.S. Because I think the biggest driver for inflation long-term in the U.S. is real estate.
Okay, well, that's a whole other topic right there. But I guess just in summary then, Nick, is now a time that you think people or even institutions should be getting aggressive with their positioning? Or is there so much going on here and so many of these short-term swings that we're seeing in what is driving markets? And that's inflation and also sometimes what the Fed has to say, that now is not the time to be overly aggressive with the portfolio. We need to figure out where exactly things are going.
Yeah, now is definitely not the time to be aggressive with the portfolios, either long or short. It seems like a lot of the valuations are maxed out, but you could have argued that 2 years ago as well. So it's not that that's a strong argument in its own right. But you have also a lot of pending catalysts out there, both from a monetary policy perspective and an economic one. And there will be opportunities. It's just a matter of being patient. Like with commodities, yeah, I expect them a lot of those to dip in a deflationary environment, but those are probably buyable dips in most commodities markets. You got to enter into these things when the opportunities when you are getting paid a favorable risk reward to enter these things. I don't, beyond maybe a few USD currency pairs, I don't see as many favorable macro entry points right now. So this is a time where to be patient. In the summer, there's not that much going to be happening probably prior to the Jackson Hole meeting anyway. So enjoy the nice weather.
Yeah, you're not alone. And hey, we've even noticed that too, is that the market has noticeably slowed. And I think that is just the start of summer coming up here. But
that's the other interesting catalyst too, is like, will volatility stay down? Because if like every time we've hit this level around VIX 15, it bounces back pretty quick. And that's historically been the line between a dangerous market and a relatively safer market. So if we have vol being more persistent, then it means the timeline for any sort of correction probably lengthens out.
Okay. Well, Nick, you've given us a lot to consider here and also some good words of wisdom to go out there and enjoy this summer. As I mentioned, I will be posting a link to Nick's YouTube page. You can follow along on some of his recent videos. And if you want us to cover any more topics with Nick, please feel free to email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. Nick, I appreciate you joining us on this long weekend down in the U.S. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll chat again soon. Thanks for your time, Nick.
Thank you.